back together again, you and I, on Monday, February 12th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show and starting a new week with thoughts on a controversial special counsel report regarding President Biden. We also aired Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy's appearance the previous day from CBS's Face the Nation, and we heard from Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill with his weekly update.
You know, when potentially bad stuff used to happen in the U.S., whether it was political stuff or crime stuff or stuff related to social justice or whatever, you know, growing up, from the time I could understand and kind of digest news, I guess I first was drawn into the news late 60s, early 70s. I say this all the time. I used to be fascinated with Walter Cronkite and the CBS Evening News. And, you know, here I had friends of mine who knew all the names of the, the superheroes. And I was the nerd in the neighborhood that knew the names of Walter Cronkite and Roger Mudd and Robert Pierpoint and Richard C. Hodlett and Eric Severite and all those people. So at that young age, I always knew that, hey, all right, we'll figure it out. The adults are in the room. In a room of 1,000 people, there are probably 100 adults who will tell the other 900 morons to shut up and we have to fix this mess you created. And I always believed that through the civil rights marches and Vietnam and the first Persian Gulf War and the second Persian Gulf War and Watergate and Iran-Contra and anything going on. Now I'm not so sure. I haven't given up all hope, but now I'm kind of sitting around going, are there any adults left in the room? And it's really distressing because in years past, I used to say, well, nobody can be that stupid. I think now the older I get, the more spins around the sun I take. Folks, I got to tell you, I am honestly worried about the level of intelligence in this country, on both sides, on the right and on the left, and on these so-called leaders of the right and the left, and the notion of the inability of people, no matter how partisan they might be, whether they're MAGA or far right, or you're a communist, progressive, and far left, as I tell people all the time, will you shut up, take a breath, and try to understand what's going on here. Let me give you a perfect example. It's the people primarily on the left, and this broke last Thursday, but I was hosting the Melissa program Friday morning, so wanted to wait till I was back here on my warm, fuzzy, always wonderful program to get into this. You have people on the left who think, because they're obviously not thinking, but who think and who run their yaps about how this Robert Hur special counsel report is some sort of cabal put together by Donald Trump. Will you stop? Everybody knows about Joe Biden. You don't need a special counsel to tell you that. You don't need some 300-page investigative report. We know about that. Look at the guy. Listen to him. Look, it's okay, as I've tried to do when I tend to look at my side of the aisle, the right side of the aisle. I can still be passionate about stuff, but I'm sure as heck not going to sit here and fail to call out the lunacy on my side of the aisle when I see it. But boy, I got to tell you, and our buddy, our pal Eric Erickson started off his program today at noon. He started talking about this. The coordinated effort over the weekend on the Sunday Gab shows, and you'll hear a little from our own Chris Murphy coming up. He was on Face the Nation yesterday. Oh, it's a hit job and this and the other. No, Senator, it's not. Let me give you a couple of examples here. Number one, and this is not me saying this. There are other people saying this, including James Carville. And this is what I mean by keeping your mouth shut. Not Mr. Carville or people who have actually been around the block, but the common person. Keep your mouth shut and listen to what others who know more about the situation are saying about it. Now, James Carville over the weekend or a few days ago said it was a really bad look for President Biden to not take advantage, and I think Donald Trump skipped one or two of them, which I thought was a mistake back then, of a possible Super Bowl interview yesterday. Now, you only do that for one of two reasons. Either he says no to that or his handlers say no because they're afraid of what he might say, or he might go into vapor lock and stumble. Or number two, you don't want to tackle a hard topic like maybe guns or the border. Either way, people get the message. I mean, why, for example, if you are Joe Biden and you're trying to fend off a push from a guy who you equate with being Satan, Beelzebub, and everybody else, and if you have confidence in your ability to carry that out, why don't you take that freebie? Well, they may ask me about the border. Well, you know what? A few million people are going to be judging you or judging any president on any other policy a few months from now. So why not take the freebie? Okay, so, you know, that's number one. In my exercise of people just taking a breath, zipping it, and listen to people who understand the situation better than you do. And trying to discern what's fact and what's out-and-out crap and garbage. And another example here is very simply, and I'll lay this out for you here, and is very simply the fact that this is not some sort of right-wing, sinister cabal organized by MAGA or the NRA or President Trump. No. Or former President Trump. No. It's not. The special counsel's report was released by Joe Biden's own Attorney General, Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland read the report and he chose to release it. This wasn't some vast right-wing leak here and there. Stop it. Merrick Garland appointed Robert Hur. Well, you know, he's a Trump guy. Well, wait a minute. If he was so partisan, then why did Merrick Garland appoint him? And if the report was so awful and some sort of cabalish undertaking here by some secret MAGA group somewhere, why was it released by Joe Biden's own Attorney General? And by the way, most of the people who are not even delving behind this, you don't even know what was in that report. You're taking the bite-size approach to this, and it's mind-boggling. Give you an example here before we go to the phones and we take a break. The Biden classified document special counsel report, released Thursday, was 388 pages. So it's not some, as my father used to say, half-assed thing, some sort of slapdash thing put together here. It's 388 pages, which actually cleared Joe Biden of any major criminal wrongdoing. But what it did is it outlined details of Biden's mental state during the investigation. Robert Hurd, the special counsel. Now listen carefully, because I know some of the stuff I may say to you may fly in the face of what makes you feel good or what you may want to believe. Robert Hurd determined that Joe Biden had been sloppy in his handling of classified documents. Biden had willfully disclosed classified documents to a ghostwriter for a memoir he was preparing after his vice presidency and before he was elected president. Some of the materials were his handwritten notes, which Biden viewed as his personal property, though they implicated sensitive intelligence sources. Other materials were military and foreign policy documents connected to Afghanistan. Her, a Republican appointee, made several distinctions between the Biden and Trump cases. And this is important, because I hear a lot of people say, well, if Biden did this and Trump did that, then no, no, no. Why don't you, as my mother used to say, stop the zeet for a minute and listen. Her, a Republican appointee, made several distinctions between the Biden and Trump cases, including one that Donald Trump lied to investigators, refused to relinquish all the documents in his possession, and tried to obstruct the investigation. Biden, on the other hand, consented to searches of his homes, immediately relinquished material, and sat for interviews with investigators. Now, one of the reasons not to prosecute Joe Biden that Hur cited immediately created a fresh political firestorm. And that, of course, pertains to the issues about how Mr. Biden would come across to a jury, whether or not he would really understand what was going on and how he would present himself. So we'll talk about that momentarily. And I wanted to start on this today because part of the problem we have here in society is that people have the intelligence or the ability to sit there and have the depth of concentration here, if you will, or the attention span of a gnat.
Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, he was a top negotiator on the immigration deal that collapsed last week. The Senate is now focused on trying to pass aid to Israel and Ukraine. Senator, good to have you here.
Yeah.
I want to get to the border later. I want to talk about the pieces you're trying to pick up here with this, $95 billion emergency spending bill. Do you have any sense yet if there are 60 votes to pass all of this aid?
I think we're going to pass this spending bill for Ukraine. We have already moved past several procedural hurdles that require 60 votes. I think there will be 60 votes in the end, and there has to be. On many days, Ukraine is firing one quarter of the artillery shells that Russia is. Some days they are only interrupting half the missiles that are being sent at Ukrainian cities. We are on the precipice of a disaster for Ukraine and for the world. Nikki Haley is right. Putin has made it clear that if he wins Ukraine, he is going to continue on ultimately to a country that's going to get the United States directly involved in a confrontation with Russia. So it has been hard to get Republican votes to support Ukraine, made very difficult by Donald Trump's opposition to Ukraine funding. But I think we're going to get this done in the Senate by early to mid next week.
So on the border, the president has said the border is not secure. You were working to try to pass this legislation. In the absence of that, should he take executive action? And if so, what?
Well, I think there's limited executive actions the president can take. He does not have the legal authority to shut down the border. Our bill, our bipartisan bill, would have given him that authority. If crossings were too high on a daily basis, the president could shut down portions of the border. The asylum system is broken. He can't fix that by executive order. It takes 10 years for people to get an asylum claim processed. Many of them don't have legitimate claims. Only legislation can fix that. Our bill would have done that. Yeah. As soon as Republicans realized that it was actually going to fix the border, they voted against it en masse because they want the border to remain chaotic because it helps President Trump in his reelection efforts.
You are optimistic that this massive security supplemental will pass this week, but there is pressure within your party to add some strings on when it comes to Israel aid. Why is it that the White House appears to be so powerless to rein in Benjamin Netanyahu when they are clearly uncomfortable with how he's waging this war?
Well, I think we saw an important development last week. The White House released a letter in which they made clear that if we approve new aid to Israel, they are going to make sure that it is used in compliance with U.S. and international human rights law. And I think that's incredibly important. Right now, the level of civilian casualty inside Gaza is unacceptable. And it does not accrue to the national security goals of the United States nor Israel, because it is going to essentially keep Hamas in business inside Gaza and around the region as they use this grievance structure as a means to continue to recruit. So I do think that that clarification will be important. I think the president's willingness to speak up a little bit more strongly about the way in which this campaign is being conducted will likely have a change in the operational pace. And I think it's incredibly important for the United States and for Israel for Hamas to be defeated, but for there to be a dramatic reduction in the number of civilians that are being killed.
To your point, the White House sent a group of officials out to Michigan to meet with Arab Americans there who are very upset with how the president has communicated specifically. CBS has a recording of one of the conversations the deputy national security advisor had. He said, "I do not have any confidence in the current government of Israel." He also said the administration has left a, quote, very damaging impression as to how much the president values the lives of Palestinians. Should there be more strings attached to this aid package you're about to vote on?
So the president does believe deeply in the importance of preserving life inside Gaza and has continually pressed for more humanitarian aid to get into Gaza. There would not nearly be the number of shipments coming in today if this president wasn't pushing hard for change. But yes, there are many of us who believe that it is very important for us to make clear with this aid package that if Israel is going to use these dollars to perpetuate this campaign inside Gaza, it has to be done in a way with less civilian life being lost. I think that's important to members of Congress. I know that's important to this administration.
And they're going to speak more about that now.
I think you will clearly hear the president. My guess is that based upon what the president said last week, that you're going to hear the president continue to stand up for a campaign that defeats Hamas, but is done in a way that is much more respectful of civilian life.
I'm going to ask you about the president. As you know, he has mixed up the names of the French and German leaders. He referred to Egypt as Mexico. Adam Smith, who is the ranking Democrat in the House Armed Services Committee, said on Friday, Biden does not have the normal strength to go out there and campaign. I think we have the soundbite.
He does not have the normal strength to go out there and campaign, you know, to do rally after rally and conversation after conversation. I'd rather have someone who's good at the job and not great at the campaigning than the other way around. But it's going to be a challenge to go out there and win that campaign.
Do you agree with him?
I don't. I mean, Joe Biden's the only person who's beaten Donald Trump, and there is absolutely a corollary between being good at the job and being good at explaining to the American people why you should be reelected. Listen, I'm somebody that's worked intimately with the president, right? I worked with him on the bipartisan gun bill. He was involved in every step of that process, not only constructing the bill, but winning individual Republican votes. It would not have passed if not for Joe Biden. And what has happened since we passed that bill? A 12% reduction in urban homicides in this country. There are literally thousands of people alive in this nation today because Joe Biden is incredibly competent and he's incredibly effective. And this partisan hit job by somebody that is looking for who's looking for a better job in the next Trump administration is not going to dissuade Americans who actually see what the real world impact on their lives is of Joe Biden's administration.
But you know, there is a difference here that we're talking about. Your fellow Democrat was talking about the ability to go out there and campaign. You just acknowledge a failure to communicate on a very important issue in regard to Palestinian lives. Is there a problem here?
There's not a problem. This president is going to be able to sell a record that is extraordinary. unemployment at record lows, factory construction booming, crime down, inflation under control. And he is also somebody that has been the only one member of our party who has effectively beaten Donald Trump in a general election. Mm-hmm. So I know that he is ready for this campaign. I have seen how effective he has been up close and personal. And I'm not going to let my constituents be distracted by a special prosecutor who's trying to gain favor within the MAGA movement.
All right, we'll mop this all up. We'll clean up the mess on aisle three with open phones coming up at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. But before we do that, our weekly check-in every Monday at this time, around 5:15 or so, Terry Cowgill. He blogs at Substack.com, Red Meat from Mushy Moderates. He also writes, you may see his stuff in and about the Connecticut News Junkie at CTNewsJunkie.com. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
Hey, not bad. I heard that a jar of jalapenos was knocked from the shelf and fell on aisle three, so get some staff over there.
Did you partake of the game yesterday? Were there copious amounts of snacks and beverages while you were watching the game?
There were, yeah. My wife and I both watched the game for different reasons. I like the game. She likes the national anthem and the halftime show. But we did enjoy it. You know, as great as the game was, and it really was, it looked like kind of a snoozer in the first half.
Yeah.
It really picked up in the second half.
Yeah.
But it was sort of overshadowed, I think, by Travis Kelce really getting in Andy Reid, the coach, Andy Reid's face. And, I just can't. You see that picture of him, right in his face, that still photo from Getty Images.
Mm-hmm.
He's a roid rage case or something, he really looks vicious. But I guess he was ticked off that he was taken off the field and wanted to be in the game. And I understand that. I was an athlete at one point, too. But I believe he was taken off. And correct me if I'm wrong, because you're a bigger football fan than I am. Wasn't he taken out because Reed wanted wanted a blocking specialist in there?
Yeah, yeah. I guess he made a quick adjustment there, and Kelce was like, hey, why wasn't I in the game? And I'm following some of this stuff up, Terry, and I guess, and don't quote me on this, but I think I saw something today or heard something where Andy Reid kind of laughed the whole thing off and said, well, that's not the first time or something like that, or this happens more than you think so. I mean, I don't know. Look, it's
CNN article here,
yeah,
saying of Kelce, he keeps me young. He tested my artificial hip out.
Listen,
he caught me off balance.
It's look, Andy Reid isn't exactly the, what is he, 65, 66? So, listen,
yeah.
God bless him. He's still active, but not exactly the most agile guy. And you're right. It's one thing to go over to a coach, maybe to bark a couple of things and walk away. But, man, you make physical contact. And I was watching the game going, is he nuts? Like, can somebody grab him? Oh, my God. Jeez.
Yeah, and that was shown on replay, I believe, because it happened during a commercial break.
Yeah.
I don't think that we saw it live. But, I mean, one of the reasons Kelce was taken out is he's, for all his gifts, and he's a phenomenal tight end.
Yeah.
He runs great pass routes. He's got great hands. He's got great speed.
Uh-huh.
He's not a great blocker.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, he's the greatest tight end of all time. No, he can't block like Ron Gronkowski can.
Yeah.
So he's not the greatest in my mind. But that's, what happens if you're not a great blocker, then maybe he wants to put somebody in who is a blocking specialist, and you're just going to have to live with that.
Yeah, listen, I'm sure that Taylor Swift, rubbed his shoulders afterwards and, relaxed him a little bit. Terry, I have to tell you, and you know where my political leanings are, but I think it was last week or the week before, I went crazy for a few minutes. I mean, listen, Ronald Reagan and Dwight Eisenhower and even Richard Nixon, they must be spinning in their graves, maybe in unison, when you hear, Terry, some of the conspiracy stuff coming about Taylor Swift.
Right.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about that last week, and it's I wrote a whole column on it. And, it's absolutely crazy, but there are people out there for whom making up conspiracy theories is sport. I think it just gives them great pleasure to think that they know what really happened and you don't. So I try to stay away from them. You just can't avert your eyes sometimes. It's too much fun.
No, you can't. Terry, I'm going to ask you to move around a little bit. You're breaking up a little here. Terry Cowgill is the guest. Right. Now, your Substack column, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. There is a state, you say, in this column that wants to license journalists. What's up with that?
Yeah. There is a – can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can hear you now, yes.
Okay. There's a lawmaker, a state senator in Oklahoma, who has proposed legislation to have the state license journalists and subject them to government drug tests and buy a $1 million liability policy.
Oh.
I would assume that's a defamation liability policy. And also make the media outlet buy a license at $250,000 a year, which is, you know, would put a lot of probably small outlets out of business, which would mean fewer journalists, which might satisfy this politician because maybe he wants fewer journalists looking and scrutinizing at what he does. But here's the kicker. Journalists also, as part of this legislation, must complete a, quote, propaganda-free safety training course of at least 8 hours developed in cooperation with PragerU. Now, you know Dennis Prager.
Yes.
The conservative radio talk show host.
Yeah.
That PragerU advances Judeo-Christian values. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that it says.
Yeah.
And includes such lessons as leftism has become a religion. But apparently this is propaganda-free, according to this lawmaker. So, I mean, this is obviously – this will get shot down in the court.
Of course.
There's even the conservative Supreme Court probably would reject it 9-0. My fear is that others will emulate this. And you'll see more of these proposals coming up. And it'll be a nuisance. It'll be unserious. But you'll see it happening because it scores political points. So I hope it doesn't happen, but – I think it will.
And Terry, you know, listen, guys like you and I, that means maybe we'll get days off for continuing education. How about that? Or what happens in the schools? Do they say, and you taught for a time, don't they have those professional development days or something like that? Training days? Remember those days?
Yes. Oh, they do. In fact, I taught in private schools, and sometimes they would actually send it, you know, back in the solid days, they would send us away for conferences, and we'd go and stay at a 4-star hotel. And,
nice.
It was nice. I don't think they do that at many schools anymore. Maybe just the rich ones. But this is actually a re-education camp, basically. And you know what the name of this legislation is called?
I'm afraid to ask. What?
It's Orwellian title. The Common Sense Freedom of the Press Control Act.
Oh, God. Somewhere.
The licensing, the license issuing entity is the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, which regulates the state's fossil fuel industry and public utility.
That's
a perfect commission, isn't it?
And Terry, you and I know, as guys who've done this, you know, there are already, and you and I, me being a talk show host, you being a journalist at times, in different levels, there are standards of slander and libel that we're all taught in J school. Now, I have a little more leeway because I'm doing an opinion-based show, but, you know, standards and libel and good, quote-unquote, journalists don't exceed those, and if during the editing process there is something questionable, it's usually taken out. So there are safeguards for that already.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this was basically done to please, stroke the political erogenous zones of conservatives who, you know, they basically think all journalists are just a bunch of libs and they want to sort of put all of them in their place. And that's really what this is all about. I think it's not a serious proposal. This is what passes for getting attention now, putting up legislation that has no chance of being enacted.
Yeah.
But it makes for great copy.
Finally, Terry, I have to get your thoughts here, and I did a good part of my show actually reading and trying to educate people what the report actually said. Robert Hur, the special counsel, who everybody is pillorying here, and I had to point out, well, the guy was appointed by Merrick Garland, President Biden's attorney general. But what do you make of this whole thing here? And you know, Terry, my thought is he kind of said, I thought, what maybe a lot of even Democrats are thinking, and maybe some of them might quietly be indebted to him. But boy, you look at some of the polls after this, and this is a messy situation.
Yeah, I mean, most Democrats are furious at the inclusion of this reference to Biden's age in this memo that was sent to the Justice Department. Now, this is standard operating procedure, by the way,
yes,
for a special counsel.
Mm-hmm.
If you elect not to prosecute, unlike regular federal prosecutors, you're supposed to send a memo to the attorney general advising him why. And there was one paragraph in, I don't know, what was it, six or seven pages that dealt with the age thing. And you would think that from a reaction to Democrats, that's all that was in it,
mm-hmm.
references to Biden being befuddled and not having a good memory. It did seem like it was a little over the top in the sense that I got the impression that Special Counsel Hur was having a lot of fun writing this, and there was a piling on kind of a feel to it. But if that was one of the reasons that he didn't prosecute, because a jury would be sympathetic to this confused old man, it's probably worth putting in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm in the minority, certainly online. I mean, people are just pillorying this fellow, and they're saying basically the best defense they have is, what about Trump?
Trump's in trouble. Trump's in fact, in the report, I think, Terry, from what I'm reading, he delineates the difference between the Trump case and the Biden case.
Yeah, he said that Biden cooperated. And that's the thing. You see Trump going to give him these speeches. Okay, so they didn't indict Trump. They shouldn't indict me. Well, Biden cooperated in the investigation. He turned over everything he had, and Trump did not. He stonewalled. He instructed his own staff to lie about where the contents were and whether they had them or not. The cases are not even remotely comparable in that sense. So, yes, Trump is being disingenuous again, but, you know, that, again, is par for the course.
Terry Cowgill, check out his stuff at the Connecticut News Junkie, also online, substack.com, red meat for mushy moderates. Terry, be good. Steer clear of the Taylor Swift conspiracies, and we will chat next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, very good.
All right, Terry, take care. Yeah, licensing journalists, stop it, stop it. It's ridiculous. It'll never fly. And listen, if an organization is allowing sloppy stories to be punished, yeah, part of that's the journalist's fault, but it's more of a fault of middle and upper management. And if you try and sue over something said in a story, it's not easy. I mean, there are standards of slander and libel, but even those can be boxed around in court.